Blog Talk Radio.
Betrayal Trauma Radio. Help for partners after sexual betrayal. Your source for healing. Your host, Carol Jurgensen-Chief, a.k.a. Carol the Coach, is here to help you navigate through the crisis of finding out that your partner is a sex addict. She is APCAT trained, so she knows that you're likely facing the greatest trauma of your life. Carol the Coach is here to help you find safety in an unsafe situation. Now, here is your host, Carol the Coach.
Well, welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and I am happy to be with you today because we're going to be talking about a really important subject. You know, so many partners get scared when they think that they're going to have to come up with boundaries to help them feel safe because their greatest fear is that their boundaries are either unreasonable or that unfortunately they can't come up with consequences to help that. So I'm going to be talking with a client, Pam, who's going to be sharing her boundaries and how we hammered that out together and came up with some boundaries that really kept her safe and also allowed her a chance to set some firm limits with her husband. And that, of course, held him accountable, and it worked really well for their family. All right, and I have Pam on the line, and Pam is a client that I have worked with over the years who came to see me because her husband, Bob, was having some serious recovery issues. So, Pam, welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio, and I so appreciate you sharing in this very, very important topic.
Hi, Carol. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. I'm wondering, Pam, if you could give our listening audience just a little bit of information as to what you were dealing with, what kind of issues Bob had, and some of the things that you had tried in the past to get to be a support to him as he worked on his recovery. And then we'll talk about boundaries next. Give us a little background.
Okay. Well, my husband has been in a inpatient rehabilitation program on three different occasions, once for drugs and alcohol and twice for sexual addiction. And I was pretty lost and didn't know how to deal with it. I did find some things more helpful than others, but it really wasn't until this last time where our marriage really was on the line that I had the opportunity and the time and the willpower to do everything possible that I could do as well. Previously to that, and we've been dealing with the issue for about 6 years. And previous to that, I was always told by counselors to just work my own program and pay attention to my own feelings and never mind what my husband was doing. And that really didn't work for me. It just made me resentful and angry. Our relationship suffered, even though he was trying in his recovery. My only emotion was anger, so I yelled at him a lot. I felt like his mother or a policeman, and I really did not want to have either one of those roles. And then go ahead.
I was going to say, Pam, I don't blame you. You know, one of the things that we are learning in this recovery field is that sex addiction and partner trauma is not the same as Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you have to be involved, and he has to be involved in making you feel safe. And if you stay on your side of the street,
and he's working on his issues. If he slips back, you don't know that he slipped back, because more than likely he'll be in denial and he'll tell himself, I will get this under control and I will stop this sexual addiction behavior and I will make this right. And then we all know that doing it by yourself isn't going to get it. So I can see where those 6 years would have been very, very frustrating. And then you actually started working with an APSAT therapist. And I was able to say, hey, you know, you got to take an active role in this. You don't want to be his policeman or his warden or his mother, but you got to determine what will make you feel safe and be active so that Bob knows what the limits are in terms of your marriage, correct? Checking in with you. Wouldn't you say that would be correct? Oh, I'm almost thinking maybe we lost her. Okay, I see what the problem is. Somehow she got put on hold. But at least she could hear us at that point, and she was able to know exactly what I asked. So you had to really work diligently on creating your own safety with these boundaries, correct?
Yes, I did. It really changed things for me, because Bob really does not like to be told what to do. And previous to me coming up with my boundaries, it really just made things worse. You know, my boundary was like, well, don't do this, don't do that. And he really didn't know any of the reasons behind it or my thinking behind the rules. So these mm-hmm. boundaries are focused on myself and what I feel that I need to feel safe.
Well, and I got to tell you, I mean, you have a natural ability to know what makes you feel safe. And yet what I tell so many partners is, boundaries are incredibly healthy when they have to do with you, but then consequences for the boundaries are absolutely necessary so that there's some motivation from the addict to really get it right. So that's what I was so impressed with. Together, we were able to come up with not only boundaries, but consequences that you could evoke. Because one of the things I know
yeah.
is if a partner says, I'm going to walk out the door the next time you act out, if she doesn't walk out the door, she's wasting her precious energy.
That's true. And also with the consequences, he knows the consequences ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't seem random to him. He knows the consequence, and it's a choice he made that results in the consequence. It really takes it all off of me as far as being a policeman or mothering him, because he's the one that made the choice to not follow the boundary.
So in actuality, one of the things that happened to Pam and Bob is that prior to him being released from the treatment center, we put together a list of boundaries and consequences that she absolutely felt would fit her life. And you have your boundaries in front of you, right, Pam?
All 27 of them.
I know. I was so impressed. So read the first boundary for us.
I feel unsafe when Bob doesn't follow therapeutic recommendations or tries to bargain or negotiate them. And then
yeah,
one of the boundaries is that Bob will follow all the therapeutic recommendations without trying to negotiate them.
Okay, so you thought about yourself and you said, okay, what do I need? And you clearly identified that you felt unsafe when Bob didn't follow those recommendations or he tried to bargain and negotiate. And so the boundary was he'll follow all therapeutic recommendations without attempting to negotiate or change them. And then what was the consequence, Pam?
The consequences is that I have the option of having no contact with Bob for 24 hours or having him go to a hotel for 24 hours.
Okay.
So he doesn't necessarily have to leave the home, but I just would not talk to him for 24 hours.
And was that difficult for you to do?
Yes. Yeah, I enjoy his company, mm-hmm. so it is difficult.
And so, obviously, in these were boundaries that you came up with 2 years ago, back in November of 2016. Did you ever have to enforce him either leaving, going to a hotel for 24 hours, or you not having any contact with him, not speaking to him?
No.
Okay, so that boundary you didn't have to maintain because I happen to know Bob, and Bob, that would be a real consequence that would feel punitive because he really does love you and he wants that ongoing contact with you, correct?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, what was the second concern you had, the need?
I'm going to skip down to number three.
Okay.
I feel unsafe and not respected when Bob is not 100% truthful. And so the boundary is that Bob will be truthful. And then my consequence is that he will inform me within 24 hours when he has not been 100% truthful. He will also inform our counselor and his sponsor. And then there's
okay,
a second
what was the second one?
That he will have monthly polygraphs.
So that's how you can be assured that he's going to be honest.
Yes.
And so you gave him a 24-hour period to come clean. And what made you decide 24 hours? What was your reasoning there?
Well, oftentimes at that point I would be in bed when he got home from a meeting, or we have different schedules, and realistically a person doesn't always have immediate access to their spouse to let them know about something, but in most cases you are in contact within a 24-hour period.
Okay, so that gave him a little leeway because you did have different schedules. And one of the reasons I recommend 12 to 24 hours is because oftentimes they have to wrestle with themselves. There's a part of them that goes into denial, and they say, you know what, this wasn't that big of a deal. I don't know that I need to tell her. I'm going to do better next time. And so they fight that fight. And yet what we know to be true is with a good polygrapher, and you heard a good polygrapher last week on the show, they know that they're going to get, that they're going to have to be accountable, and they know that the spouse is going to find out. And that's the last thing that they really want. They don't want to disappoint the wife when there's no way of getting out of a lie. So I love the fact that you picked 24 hours. You did it for practical purposes. I encourage it for psychological purposes. And now I got to ask you, in the last couple of years, how many times would you say that Bob's been dishonest?
I'd say 5 to 8 times, somewhere around in there. And quite often before a polygraphy test, he does come up with something that he hadn't been 100% honest. Sometimes I think he's in denial himself, and then when he's thinking about the questions I'm going to ask, he does a little soul searching and comes up with every little thing that might interfere with a positive result.
Well, that's a good point. And again, sometimes these things aren't even that big of a deal, but what we're really working with the addict on is getting them to learn how to be honest about everything, about taking out the trash, about where they were, about how much money they spent, even if it's that they went and bought dilly bars at the Dairy Queen, you know. I recently had a man who was in the midst of writing out his polygraph, and he was really in the first few weeks after discovery, so his wife was highly traumatized. And he went to one of his first meetings that had a parking garage, and it took him a half hour to get out of this parking garage. And when he did, he went by White Castle, and he bought himself some hamburgers. Now, two things. One is he decided to eat them up and then throw away the evidence because he and his wife have a very healthy lifestyle. And then two, because he came home late, she was very worried. She wondered if he was acting out. And he eventually had to say, no, you know, it took me a long time to get out of the parking garage, and I stopped by White Castle. And so she went right out to that car. Actually, it was a truck. And there was no White Castle wrappers. And she said, if you were at White Castle, why aren't those wrappers in the truck? And he said, because I threw them away because I wasn't going to tell you. And it's those kind of lies that we have to help the addicts realize we're not going to tolerate anymore. And so this is an excellent, excellent boundary to help Bob stay honest. Now, what's the next one you want to read?
I thought I would go down to number 6.
Okay.
And I feel unsafe when Bob watches R-rated movies or higher or unrated movies and violence and horror films. So my boundary is that Bob will not watch those above-mentioned films. And so we have a parental controls on TV, mm-hmm. including Netflix and Amazon. And then the consequences, again, he must inform me and his counselor within 24 hours. Then if there is continued abuse of the boundary, Bob will lose TV use for 2 days.
Okay, and so why the horror flicks? Explain to our listening audience why that was a part of that non-safety.
Because I feel that it feeds his dopamine, and it actually is no longer a boundary because he is doing well. You know, this was almost 2 years ago. But early on, I thought that the excitement of the horror movies was replacing the excitement that he was getting from looking at pornography, that it was doing a similar chemical reaction in his brain.
Okay, that makes total sense. So we are always trying to get the addict to calm down their brain and to shut down some of that dopamine, especially in the reward center. And so you were able to tell Bob that that's how you felt, and he agreed to go by the boundaries, and you had the perfect consequence. Excellent. What's the next one?
And the next one is, I feel unsafe when I don't know where Bob is. So the boundary is that Bob will inform me as to where he is going, and he will call or text me if he is deviating from his plans with an explanation as to why. He will also keep his phone on at all times, and he will allow me to use the Find My Friends on our phone. And there's a lot of boundaries on this one. And he will answer the mm-hmm. phone when I call or text me later if he is in a meeting or something.
Mm-hmm. And so, obviously, you said there were a lot of boundaries around this because?
Because he always had his phone in his hand and most often used his phone to look at pornography or email friend finder hookups and that kind of thing.
Okay, that makes sense.
I still get nervous when he's on his phone for any length of time.
Absolutely, understandable. And then tell our audience what Friend Finder is.
Oh, it's an app on my iPhone, and it shows me a location, a real-time location, and then he has given me the addresses of the meetings that he goes to, or if it's a restaurant or something, that usually does show up on the little map. Mm-hmm. And I also use it for myself. You know, if I'm out walking or something, somebody can find me if I were to get lost.
Yeah, I know it's a wonderful app for parents that are tracking their kids to make sure they are where they say they are. So it has a lot of different capabilities and reasons why it can be helpful. Now, you know, I'm a big believer in you don't track anybody or anything until they've created an infraction. So this is the perfect tool for partners of sex addicts and vice versa, like you said. That way people can find you if you disappeared. Now, it is not always perfect, right? I mean, it can put you a block or two away from where you're really supposed to be.
Yes, especially if he's en route. And on those occasions, I ask him, and he's given me a reasonable explanation. And also, in the beginning, I checked every time he went someplace. And a few months ago, he was late, and I questioned him, and he said, well, I just figured you'd look on your friend finder and know that that's where I was. I think he'd stopped at the grocery or something, and actually that particular night I had not looked.
So that's you don't want them to get in that hole of just expecting that this is as good as them being accountable to their spouse. And so that's also something to remember as you're coming up with boundaries. My listening audience might go ahead and get a piece of paper and write down some of these boundaries and then make them your own. Decide how you want to do this. Give us another boundary.
Okay. I feel unsafe I feel unsafe when Bob is overstimulated by electronics use. So again, there's a lot of boundaries on this one. We did not have a DVD player for 60 days, and then it was reassessed at that time. And I think we actually went to 90 days before we watched DVDs. We limited TV viewing to news, Jeopardy, and one other program nightly with me present. The third one was four TV movies weekly and one theater movie monthly. No IMDb, and I don't remember what that stands for, but he was constantly looking up movies to see what the sexual content was. So he's not allowed to use that app. No streaming, parental controls in place, and the consequences was the TV would be moved into my bedroom if he broke any of those boundaries. Mm-hmm. At that time, we were in separate bedrooms.
Say that again.
Oh, there's a new boundary because we're in the same bedroom now, but I think I added that he had to add two recovery behaviors.
And that might look like what?
An extra meeting a week, or journaling, or calling someone else in the program, which are all things that he does, but he would have to do it two extra times.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And for our listening audience, you know, it's interesting because Pam said, no, capital IMDB. And that's actually a movie service that lets you know what is rated G, what is rated GP, what is rated R, what is rated X. But in this situation, Pam, you felt like he was going through that to see what was what the ratings were, and that actually lit up his reward center because there was some fantasy involved as he looked at descriptions of rated R or rated X movies, correct?
Yes, yes. And when he was active in his addiction, he would use that app before renting a movie, and we would watch. We'd be watching a horrible movie, really boring, and it would have one sexual theme in it. And I'd look at him and say, is that why you rented this movie? So, you know, it's kind of a trigger for me, for him to be looking up those kinds of details.
Well, and, you know, I always say that females in particular, partners, they have good gut. They may not trust their gut because their addict, you know, was deceitful and lied to them and gaslighted them and made them feel like they didn't have good gut. But truly, we've been made to have babies. And when you have babies, or at least when you have that capacity, you have good intuition. And so here you are watching a terrible movie with one sex scene, and you knew, hey, we're watching this movie because you want to get a hit. And so I love the fact that you would check that out with him. That was really important. So give us another boundary.
Well, early on, when he first came home, I had a boundary. I did not feel safe having a sexual relationship with Jim. So we did not have a sexual relationship until I felt comfortable having that. And so the boundary was that he would not approach me or cajole me into having sex with him. And it was something that we went to your office and discussed prior to restarting our sexual relationship.
And did Bob try to negotiate that boundary?
In your office, he did. Not at home, but a couple of times in a couples counseling session. He did, and with your help, we decided when it was the right time for us as a couple.
Yes, exactly. So again, listening audience, don't be surprised if there's a real effort to negotiate and compromise. And sometimes you're able to do that because you think about what they're saying and you say, you're right. Maybe I need to ask you to respond back to me in 20 minutes. And then other times you stand firm because you know what you need to feel safe. And that is super important. So feel free, Pam, to go ahead and let's talk about three more boundaries. Because like you said, you had 27.
Yeah. I do have one. Let me see. It was here a second ago. When I feel that he is not listening to me, I can't find it now. I had it a minute ago, but I feel unsafe when Bob is not listening to me.
I'm looking for it too. Physical care, undisciplined, buffered. I'm not seeing that one either, but you know one I am seeing that I'd like to talk about? And that is the one about your clothes. You know, so many partners that I talk to, they really feel unsafe when they're taking a bath or changing their clothes. It's almost like they don't want to be objectified. So that is number
18, I think.
18. Yeah. Would you talk a little bit about that one?
Yeah, I feel unsafe when Bob leers at me when I'm changing clothes. And so my boundary was that he would not be in the closet area when I was changing clothes. And the consequence would be that he would not be allowed in the bedroom while I was changing clothes, and that he would need to inform our counselor, which is you, and one other person of the breach. I mean, because often we're changing clothes at the same time, so it would be an inconvenience for him to have to wait in the living room while I change clothes in the bedroom. And I just last week, I was changing clothes, and I thought to myself how nice that I didn't have to worry about that. That I don't feel that he leers at me anymore. But when he first got home, I did feel that way.
And so obviously you said that you felt like he was leering at you. When you used the word leer, does that mean you were afraid he was objectifying you?
Yes.
And are you saying now that there's enough recovery that's occurred and enough time has gone by that he is not, he's able to come in the room because you don't feel like he's objectifying you?
Correct.
How did you get to that point?
Well, I don't think I got to that point. I think he got to that point through hard work and counseling that, I think that he objectifies women less than he did. Maybe he doesn't at all anymore. I'm not sure about that. But I do not feel that he is objectifying me. I might catch a look of appreciation, but there's just the leering. There is kind of some kind of a look or shadow over his eyes that, you know, kind of, it was a hit, kind of his eyes glazed over when he looked at me, and that no longer happened.
Got it. And again, it's important for spouses, for partners, to pay attention to what they believe they see and to trust that. And I know that I work with a woman, and she actually had a bathroom door that locked, but she had a separate room for her tub, and that didn't have a lock on it because, of course, it was in a locked bathroom. And so she had her husband put locks on that also because she said, you know, it was almost as if he didn't understand why he couldn't go to the bathroom while she was in another room, and it just didn't feel safe. And I said, well, how come you just didn't lock the bathroom? And she said, I just felt like I needed two locks to really feel safe. And, you know, you just said earlier that, you know, his behavior had changed. It wasn't his leering had changed. It wasn't that you got over something, that it was really he did a better job of humanizing the experience. And so when a partner feels like maybe they're going overboard, I always say, talk to your therapist, talk to your coach, share it with women in your support group, get some feedback, because more than likely you'll get supported to the point where you really do feel like your needs and concerns to feel safe are important and valuable. So now, one more boundary.
Okay. I have a boundary that I feel unsafe when we entertain large family groups or have his family spend the night with us. Especially early on, we were in separate bedrooms. I felt that we needed a certain amount of privacy because we were going through a lot in our relationship, and we really didn't need to have a lot of visitors at that time, and he has a lot of family from out of town. So I asked for this boundary, and a couple of times I actually provided a hotel for them so that we could, because not everyone can afford a hotel. That's why they want to stay with us. So we provided the hotel instead of having them over. And they understood. And my consequence on that was that, well, if he insisted on having his family, I would just go stay somewhere else. But I did not have to do that.
Oh, fantastic. So, again, are you saying that having them over, it really interrupted and interfered with your lifestyle and situation, and it just decreased the chaos to have them stay somewhere else?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And so that might be a situation where somebody would say, what's the big deal? And yet when a partner's been traumatized and her life has been chaos to the worst degree of not feeling like she can trust the person that's supposed to have her back, it's important to create as much as possible a peaceful, serene environment so that you can get your prefrontal cortex back online and not go into that fight, flight, or freeze response. And so this was something that was unrelated to the addiction itself, but it was related to the trauma that you had suffered, correct?
Yes. And, you know, it would be very stressful to have family over and try to pretend that everything is fine when it isn't, you know, and have them questioning, well, why are you in separate bedrooms? You know, why do you have this control on your TV? You know?
Yeah.
It's hard enough to have the boundaries without having to explain them to other people.
Yeah, in lots of ways it kept your privacy, and it really made you not have to go through those explanations.
Yes.
So I think our listening audience can see how extensive boundaries can be, and I love what Pam did. She created a statement for herself of what her need was, and a lot of them revolved around safety, and then she created the boundary, and then she created consequences that she knew that she could follow through on. So as we begin to end the show, Pam, I'm going to ask you, what piece of advice would you give our listening audience if they're sitting there thinking about wanting to come up with some real pertinent boundaries?
I would take a look at yourself and see what it is that you need. When I first tried doing the boundaries, I was more focused on Bob and what drove me crazy about him. And that didn't really work for me. And then I started looking at why it drove me crazy, and that was a better start. And then when I really started looking at what I needed to feel safe, that is when I really started making progress in trying to get the boundaries.
Yeah, and you have done an excellent job. I really feel like Bob has worked extremely hard on his recovery. He's just done a wonderful job. However, it was you paying attention to what you needed, your boundaries and consequences that you could implement that helped to hold him accountable. And you didn't do it for that reason, but that was a byproduct of you staying safe. So I just so appreciate you sharing this because, let's face it, sex addiction and partner betrayal are fairly new topics. You know, we've always had sex addiction, but never to this degree with intensity and frequency. And so, you know, what I know is you're giving back, and it really makes a difference. So thank you so much, Pam.
Oh, you're welcome, Carol. Thank you for having me.
All right. You take care.
Bye.
Bye. So obviously, if you're listening to the show, you can know that you too can make a difference. And one of the ways that you can do that is by emailing me at carol@carolthecoach.com with your questions, with topics that you'd like to hear about, with ideas or stories that you might want to share, because we really all are in this together. And that is what is so very important, is that you're not alone. We're here for you and with you, and we want to make this radio show as pertinent, as specific, and as informative as possible. So again, you can email me at carol@carolthecoach.com. And if you want an APSATS counselor, somebody who is partner sensitive, who understands the trauma that you've been through, then go to APSATS.org and find a therapist or a coach in your area. And if you can't, then one of the things you might decide to do to contact one of the coaches anywhere in the United States, or actually the world. We have coaches all over the world, and they will be able to work with you and set you up with workshops and intensives and skill building that you need. And they can do that, again, via Skype, via Zoom, or via phone. They're amazing, and they have been trained to be partner sensitive. And so they know what you've been through, as do the clinicians at APSATS.org. So we will see you next week for more Betrayal Recovery Radio. And just know that we're helping you to feel safe in an unsafe situation. You have a great week. And as I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself and don't put off these boundaries. I know they can be exhaustive, but it's one of the best ways that you can remain safe. Have a great week.
For more information, go to APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Oh, what a great audience. Let's dim the lights for this next one. Nope, too much. Ah, there it is. Gotta get things just right. Like Progressive's Name Your Price tool. Tell us what you want to pay and we help you find coverage options that fit your budget. And now, the mood is right. Wait, the lights are back on again. Trudy, can you... And now it's completely dark.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.